Thank you, Alexandre. We have managed to finish our two presentations even earlier than expected, so we have more time for discussions, questions, and I see hands. We have approximately half an hour before a coffee break for discussion and questions.
I have a very short technical question to Alexandre. You say about 100,000 people, and I just printed this concept, and it says about 100 people. No, it's matter because we have at least 2,000 NGOs in Ukraine, and 100 people is probably half of them, and 100,000 people is. Yeah. It's very interesting technical question.
I think you can compare our sources of data. Thank you. I think the authors of this conceit were not very clear within this question, because I think there are many non-governmental organizations which counts not less than 100 people. I think it's no real that each non-governmental organization which unites not less than 100 people will delegate its member for this council. I think we can do some interview with members of this Humanities Council, and so they should explain how they see such representation of this member.
I think it's a really interesting issue you raised, because representatives from NGOs will form basically this council that should guarantee the independence of the media. Who will represent which NGOs? This is a question. I think for me, it's time to discuss how we can, or how the NGOs can organize the process of selecting members to guarantee that those who will represent NGOs not will be only from government NGOs, government-controlled NGOs, or opposition NGOs. How to create this body really independent. Yeah, I see the written hand.
If such a quantitative criteria would be applied in Germany, 99% of the organization would be football clubs. The other 1% would be tennis clubs, because they are non-governmental organizations, organized, and they, of course, have more members than non-governmental organizations with a social relevance. I'm a little suspicious about this approach. It hasn't appeared. It has the advantage that a quantitative criteria always is operational, and there's no dispute. It's not a good way to operationalize what we try to operationalize with the word of being socially relevant. We talked about that in Kyiv already, that the members of our public service councils come from groups that are socially relevant. This is a better idea, but it has a disadvantage that it's not a strict quantitative and sharp criteria. We have to choose between these criteria, like we have, with the disadvantages to operationalize it, and a strong or numerous criteria which is not really appropriate. Maybe John can find something in between that really reach the target that should be reached, that those groups are represented, that really are relevant and whose voices shall be heard in the public discussion. So a small group that represents, for instance, ethnic minorities or religious minorities, which are worth to be integrated in society for the benefit of social coherence, even if they only have 50 or 100 active members, could be more important than a football club with, let's say, FC Bayern with 10,000 members.
Yes, thank you. Also would like to add to the discussion, I don't see the football clubs here. Maybe the Cologne team is so bad that they rarely want to go to the field and sit in some broadcasting organization. Yes. Anyhow, seriously, we have a lot of experience with that in Germany, and we would not talk about NGOs. NGOs, by saying they are non-governmental, they also claim to be somehow political. Yeah, but you know, outside of the government, but concerned with political questions. Our system is to ask what are, as Manfred Koop said, the socially relevant groups, and usually it starts with churches. Yeah. Now we have the Protestant Church, the Catholic Church, and because of a special past, there's Jewish representation. There's no Muslim representation, and one third of the population is not in any church, it's not represented. Talking about sports, usually the umbrella organization of the whole sports system of the country or of the state for which it is organized is represented, is allowed to send a delegate. It's the same with universities, with local communities, with many other organizations that we would not call NGOs. Also, there are traditional organizations that have some governmental impact, like on environment, or women's organizations, or consumers' organizations. And a special element, of course, is the economic system. So, as we say, employers and employees are equally important, so there are delegates of the business associations as well as of the trade unions. And maybe because we're talking about media, special representative of journalist organizations. Yeah. All this is open to manipulation. Yeah. For example, our ZDF has the largest broadcasting council of 77 members. And in fact, before the real session begins, all members are meeting in two smaller caucuses, smaller councils. The black, the followers of the Conservative Party, and the red, the followers of the Social Democratic Party. And it turns out that everybody, you know, fits closer to one side or the other. Yeah? Like the trade unions, of course, Social Democratics, the Protestants, whatever. The others go to the black caucus. So, I mean, there's politicization throughout the society. But still, these independent voices are important to represent other segments of the society. I'm just saying NGO is not the right term. There shouldn't be a limit by numbers, because, let me say, then you would have all the organizations with many members, the churches, the trade unions, and so on, maybe the sports associations, but not small organizations that might also contribute. So I think you have to do some more think working, yeah, on how to include society, civil society, into the governance of the system.
A first question, how would you consider the ownership of the media belonging to members of the government? For instance, you have Choroshkovsky and television channels that are private or state?
I think that these media are private ones. Because they are belonging to the private person. And then these persons are in power, are in our government, this media supports them. And then these persons become their positioners, they support their position. I think that is the question, and so and.
I'd like to respond to remarks of Professor Kleinstaube. Maybe you are right about non-government organizations, but I think we have a special situation in Ukraine when non-government organizations which are related to media system all the time were quite popular among journalists. And they played important role in the development of civil society and freedom of speech in Ukraine. And this is why if today we talk about eliminating of these organizations from the discussion or from the idea of representative of representation in this system of public broadcasting service, it will be quite strange in our period of time. Because they, I think they still play great role in the development of and popularization of these ideas, you know. And maybe later they will play some another role. But today we usually we are looking, we look at these organizations as so important for the development of ideas of public broadcasting service in Ukraine. And Maybe this is a situation when your points will be in discuss in Ukraine later, you know, not today. Maybe so.
Yes, I understand this very well. I was just talking about the German situation, but I want to emphasize journalist organizations often have a mandate in these councils. Not just the journalists of an organization where they are working. And I also said, you know, if they have business interests, then they cannot sit in there. Yeah. This is the one point. I wanted to make another point. Oh, yes. Of course, when you have a special starting situation, that is, you have NGOs in a country that are fighting for public broadcasting, I think it would be an excellent idea to include them in the supervisory bodies. We did not have this situation, neither in Britain, where it all started with the BBC, nor in Germany with public broadcasting. As Mr. Sheehy said, that was largely done by the occupation forces. But there are other countries where, in fact, active media groups were incorporated into the organization. The best example are the Netherlands. In the 1920s, the Netherlands were divided into more or less seven different groups of people who had little communication, who had their own schools, their own churches, their own sports organizations. They were religious groups, political groups, regional groups. How did they organize their public broadcasting? Well, they said everybody has to pay a license fee, But the license fees have to be paid to one of these organizations, and as much money as they can collect proportionally, they get programming time on the North, it's called the North System. And of course, this was 70 years ago, and now it's working quite differently. But just to give an idea on how you incorporate active broadcasting groups into an organization. Yeah? We didn't have these groups, so still they are not represented, but no reason why you shouldn't do it.
I would like to come back to the question of the relation between the government sector and the commercial sector. I think to be depending too much on the commercial sector is a bad thing for the media, to be depending only on commercial interests. So countries that only have commercial organized media systems are lacking a lot of content that is important from the civil society, and countries where only governmental broadcasters or media suppliers exist equally bad. But the worst case really is where there are coalitions between the government and the commercial sector, because then you really cannot determine anymore the responsibilities, and there are no clear responsibilities anymore between the two different ways to steer media order. That's the reason why in Germany, traditionally, it always was forbidden for the government to have ownership in the media. And the public always was very strict on controlling that. So this is, I think, a very essential framework for every country to prohibit that the government owns the media, the commercial media, or part of the commercial media, and that it needs organizations that control that and enforce that.
I want to come back to the question of social relevant groups, and I think it is very strange that these Ukrainian social relevant groups don't promote the idea of PSB implementation in Ukraine. They don't speak about this, they don't fight for it. I don't know why they don't do this, but they don't do this. And NGOs are the main players within this process, and in Ukraine, NGOs oppose our government in this question and are involved in this discussion, not social relevant groups.
Okay, just going back to this question, Alexandra. So maybe for your information, so it's a law on non-governmental sector in Ukraine is designed in the way where people can come together to defend their cultural, political, and different rights. So all those active social relevant groups, they mainly organize a non-governmental organization. It was like a post-Soviet legislation that requires people to be legalized, to be recognized as a legal entity, to have a stamp, bank account, etc., etc. So, of course, it's the many NGOs, they have 100 NGOs in human rights protection. And I envision that, for example, law in place and those social relevant group or minority groups, they maybe should think about if the law states there is one representative from minority groups. Maybe, does it mean that all minority groups, which might exist like 11 or 20 organizations, they should form coalition and to nominate among themselves someone to the public broadcast, or to nominate different ones in order to help people to replace each other in the role where the term is over. So I think this is mechanism should be found in order how they will act to be represented properly.
No, I... Sorry. I want to react to you and to your question. I think when we establish our public service system, also our relevant social groups were not interested in broadcasting. They could not imagine that they could play a role there. In fact, our system was thought up by the head of the radio organization in the 1920s, Hans Bredow, who after 1945, he was never involved with the Nazis, which is not that common in Germany, but he was absolutely clean. And he was asked how we could reorganize the system. And different to the BBC, which was the general model, we introduced the idea of those broadcasting councils. And that goes back to Hans Bredow personally. He was talking about mini parliaments, or he was talking about the council of a stock company. These were his reference points. And he said, like in a parliament, people from different sides of society should sit in there. That was the guiding principle. And this is also why he felt that churches should be included that most would not call NGOs and other large organizations of a society. So leading was the idea of a mini parliament. And also, as I said before, no organizations who had broadcasting in mind were included. We had a few like the radio amateur, yeah. But here the feeling was it has to be a reflection of the general society. And because Ukrainian society is different and has a different history, of course, probably the supervisory body would look quite differently. I would certainly propose that you say we reserve seats for people who are interested in broadcasting and who might organize a kind of broadcasting supporters or listeners organization, yeah? We offer them a seat. So what we realized is as soon as these large organizations had a chance to do some decision-making in public service broadcasting, they established an infrastructure. Like the churches are quite active in putting out media information, and also other organizations, even the sport organizations, now have people who are specializing in media so that they know what's going on in those councils and can contribute and somehow protect the interests there.
I just want to add a few words to what you said to clarify that I think in Ukraine the rule of the government is still so great and greater than in Germany that our government can influence, to make a substantial influence on any religious organization, on any sport organization, and to send controlled people through this organization. So in this way, the government will control. Even being formally independent, those people can be controlled by the government. So this is a problem, and I think it requires to think more how to protect from this scenario. Thank you.
Okay, a new question. Perhaps we should search for the independence on a certainly different way. Once more, I'm a lawyer. And so my question to Mr. Petrova, you said in your speech that we have very good legislation, very independent legislation, basic one, from 79, and now it's rolling back to a very state-near system. Could it be helpful if there would be a European constitution with Article 11? I know you are not a member, but by the Council of Europe it could come nearer. Could it be helpful to get more independence and liberty into the broadcasting companies? Because I wanted to tell you one case that I had to do here in Cologne. The Prime Minister of North Rhine-Westphalia decided to take off the Western German Broadcasting, is the largest broadcasting company of all Europe, and we are responsible for all North Rhine-Westphalia, to explain it. The Prime Minister wanted to have two big frequencies of radio for the upcoming private concurrency competition to the public broadcasters, RTL Sat1, to those times. And Vox should be founded, and so he took two big frequencies from VDR and gave them to Vox. And what did we do? We went to court. As I said, I want to explain to you how the basic order is helping to get more independence. We went to our highest constitutional court in Karlsruhe and we won the case. And you can imagine what the politicians here in this country were feeling and struggling against VDR. But we had the legal protection of the highest court and we got those frequencies back. So my question to you, could European standards help to more independence in your country?
I believe sure they do, and actually this membership in Council of Europe actually very promising one for particular members of the society, because this is a tool where government is pressed from this from Strasbourg to proceed what they promised to accomplish and still no. Regarding highest court, now we Ukraine undertook judicial reform, and the legal system undergoing some very significant changes. So, and also it is a matter of the that always I'm always was telling journalists, so you should proceed with defending your rights before the court. And one of our colleagues, I believe Mr. Velikov, said this morning that there is a lot of good laws, but laws don't work. Yeah. But how can you expect law work if you don't refer to the law, if you don't rely on the law, if you don't using the law defending your rights, right? So it's absolutely, my answer to your question is absolutely yes, but issue is maybe this, I don't know, maybe we could bring this discussion to be more productive and to lead to some actions, to lead some like Article 19 organization, maybe inter-rights organization, different bodies from the Council of Europe side, to provide expertise to all those drafts which are present and registered with the parliament, and to show what exactly is done. And I have to tell you that Venice Commission, as a working body for the Council of Europe, all legislation which is relevant for any, let's say, freedom or liberties related area, they should undergo Venice Commission formal expertise. So, and I believe none of those drafts will be successful with this commission analysis and finding. So please, if you know the way, how can you contribute to Ukrainian matters, please do.
It's difficult for us to give you advice, and I'm interested in the proposal of how to widen the spectrum, to widen the basis to find, to create a body. Perhaps it would be helpful to find an independent body of prominent Europeans, not politicians, artists, writers, men and women without any doubt about her prominence, her intellectuality, and her independence. To find, not to rule the radio and television of Ukraine, but to find a body as an advisory board which will help you to find the people in the country to form such a first radio council. I think it's a as Kleinsteuer said before, you need time to develop the interest in the social groups, to be a member of the body of controlling the radio. And perhaps it's an idea, I just found it after your intervention, to find such an 5-7 people from all over Europe, not affiliated to Merkel, to Berlusconi, to Putin, or no, independent people who are only representative because they have a name for all of us, a Nobel Prize winner or such women or men who are I don't know in English. Without, there's no doubt about independence, and they are not interested in some money from a government or a party or so on. Okay.
I think it's time for a coffee break. I think it's a brilliant idea about foreign body. I think it will help like it did probably 1100 years ago when people in Kiev they couldn't communicate with each other, different sides, so they called people from Sweden to govern them. So it worked for several hundred years and it's just an example. So I think we can continue our discussion during a coffee break, and the coffee break will be for 15 minutes, and after the break we will have the wonderful presentation, and I will pass the microphone to Dr. Manfred Koch. He will conduct the last session of our today's conference. Thank you so much, and I'll see you in 15 minutes here.